Still broadcasting from the Civic Cypher Studios, welcome back to the QR Code, where we share perspective, seek understanding, and shape outcomes. The man you are about to hear from is a man committed to changing the world for better forever. He is the Q in the QR Code. He goes by the name of Q Ward.
And the voice that you just heard keeps me committed to that mission, because there are days where it no longer seems like it's realistic. He is R in the QR Code. He goes by the name Ramses Ja.
That's me, and we work well together, and we're going to keep working. Stay tuned. Later on for entertainment, Obama's celebrity guest list is way longer than Trump's. I saw that guest list, and it looks like that's going to be the real party. So if you were looking for a way to celebrate the nation's 250th, I think the Obama Presidential Center in the south side of Chicago is the place to be. We're going to have some dialogue if we get there. Recommend a content creator to everyone and explain why. But right now, and as always after the break, it is time for Q Word Clapback. One time for Marcus Garvey. Q, take it away.
You know, sometimes someone makes a logical and pragmatic argument, but it doesn't fit what everybody else thinks, so we throw it away. I think we might need to revisit some things. I want to make an argument that a lot of people have been trying to not let me make, but I feel like Black people leaving the United States is not surrender, is not panic, is not betrayal. I actually think it's perfectly logical, pragmatic even, historically grounded in strategy. Strategy that's been on the table since Marcus Garvey. And I'm starting to sense that a growing number of Black Americans are choosing that path now with the calculator in one hand and a passport in the other. Start with history, because the people who treat exit as a fringe or extreme idea, I think have forgotten what the canon looks like. W.E.B. Du Bois moved to Ghana at age 93 and died a Ghanaian citizen in 1963. Richard Wright and James Baldwin left for France. Josephine Baker took French citizenship in 1937. Nina Simone left in 1979 and lived out her years in Liberia, Switzerland, Netherlands, and France. Stokely Carmichael moved to Guinea in 1969, took the name Kwame Ture, and died there in 1998. Tina Turner became Swiss in 2013 and renounced her American citizenship on the way out. The list goes on. And these are not obscure people. These were giants. They all reached the same conclusion, and they all acted on it. Now look at right now. Since 2019, somewhere between 1,500 and 3,000 Black Americans have relocated permanently to Ghana. In November 2024, the Ghanaian government granted citizenship to 524 Black Americans in a single ceremony, four times the number who took the oath in 2019. The movement has a name, Blacksit. The largest online community for it has over 50,000 members. The destinations are Ghana, Portugal, Mexico, Colombia, South Africa, Costa Rica, Thailand, Dubai, and growing. While neighborhoods of Lisbon and Accra and Mexico City are organizing around Black American arrivals, this is not a fantasy. This is a sociological event in real time. And the data is in. Why are Black Americans leaving? Well, the pragmatic case is not complicated at all. The most recent Federal Reserve data shows the median white American family has 6.3 times the wealth of the median. In 2022, Black Americans live on average 4.5 years less than the national average. Public health scholar Arlene, forgive me if I say her name wrong, Gironimus called the mechanism weathering. The chronic stress of Black Americans does measurable biological damage and shortens your life. And this is not an opinion. These are receipts on a 400-year contract that has not held up. When you take those numbers and you lay them next to a country where your dollar goes three times further, and you can buy property, where the daily threat environment is lower, where the school your children goes to does not require you to brief them on how to survive a traffic stop, the math does what math does. It produces an answer. And for a growing number of Black Americans, maybe including this one, and let me not be dishonest, because that maybe is doing a lot of work, the answer is leave. The standard objection is that leaving is abandoning the fight. I want to take that objection serious and explain why it does not survive contact with historical record. Every diaspora in America history has built power from outside the country and pushed it back in. Irish, Cuban, Jewish, Polish, Armenian. The diaspora is not the opposite of influence. It is a different shape of influence. Garvey understood this in the 1920s when he tried to build a Black-owned shipping line to move people and capital across the Atlantic. He had the right idea, but the wrong operational capacity. The right idea is still the right idea. The Black diaspora that holds capital, citizenship, and can reach in multiple countries is more powerful than a Black population concentrated in one country that has spent 400 years figuring out new ways to ignore, oppress, and manage it. Leaving is also not the same as not caring. The people moving to Ghana and Portugal and Mexico are not deleting their families, their churches, their music, their political work. They are relocating their base. They are voting with their feet, with their dollars, with their children's future. They are doing what every other group in this country has been allowed to do without their loyalty being interrogated. Here's what I want to say plainly. If you stay, that is a legitimate choice. However, if you leave, that is a legitimate choice as well. The stigma that says one is heroic and the other is cowardly is a stigma that keeps Black Americans pinned to a place that has made it clear over and over that it is comfortable with our suffering, especially when it's profitable. This country had 400 years to prove that it could hold us, and it has not done so. Refusing to die in a house that is not your house is not betrayal. It is sanity. Before I close, I want to deal with one objection head on. Leaving cost money. Not everyone can. The wealth gap that makes that case for leaving is the same wealth gap that puts the move out of reach for most Black Americans. That is real, and I will not pretend that it's not. But the answer to not everyone can leave is not no one should. It is the people who can should, and the diaspora they build should hold the door open for others to follow. That is how every other group has done it. The first wave establishes the base. The second wave finds work and family ties already laid. The third wave inherits citizenship and property. Garvey tried to build that mechanism 100 years ago with the Black Star Line. The contemporary version is the Black Americans on the ground in Accra and Lisbon and Mexico City who are quietly doing the same job, building the pathway as they walk it. So the next time someone tells you Black people leaving the United States is not a real strategy, ask them to name a 400-year project with worse results than the Black American project in this country, and then ask them their plan for the next 400.
Whew. That's heavy. I like that energy, though. Well, maybe you might have something cool to share for this one. Recommend a content creator to everyone and explain why. Let's have some dialogue. Okay. I've shared a few different content creators, and I feel like some of them could be repeated for folks that hadn't heard me say it in the past. But If I had to choose one, right? That's not what the question says, but if I had to choose one, I think that I, well, first, let me tell you why. So I, of the two of us, of me and Q, I am subscribed to some crazy stuff, right? And it's strategic. I'm subscribed to like Nazi message boards, and I'm subscribed to, you know, far right wing extremist groups and all that sort of stuff, right? Now, I probably should pay closer attention to what's going on in there, but I just kind of have enough of a feel for what's going on in there to keep track of trends and to know what people are saying and how they're consuming information and what they're making of it, right? Because if I ever encounter these folks in the wild, I may have to engage with them. And while I don't love the idea of that, it helps to know what they might say so that I can be prepared and respond accordingly. And if I don't find someone as extreme, I can assure you that even if you're not as extreme as these folks, you're still going to have their talking points, right? Because it's all based in like half-truths and outright ignorance, right? So even the little bit that I do have to consume, if an email comes my way and it says, hey, such and such just posted whatever, all that sort of stuff, it's so taxing, right? And that feeling that there's a group, like these people get together and party. These people like each other. And that's the reason that they get together is because of their hatred of me and my children and my whatever, right? I balance that out with like positive stories, right? So if I had to pick one, I think the one I would pick is called Black People at Peace. It's a Reddit thread that I'm subscribed to. And Black People at Peace is kind of a stretch. It's really just Black people living lives. It's really just people living their lives, right? But that particular aesthetic, a Black person doing something happy that's online, and that's really it. It's calm. They're not partying. They're not at the club. They're not rapping. None of that sort of stuff. They're just living, and they're not being chased. They're not being shot. They're not. Nothing is traumatic. They're not. You know, they're just calm on a beach or riding a horse or, you know, playing softball with their kids or whatever. It just gives me life, man. It gives the life right back to me that I spend, you know, in these message boards. And you know, Q, I'll let you, you know, take it from here. But I have a few that are kind of similar, but I want to make sure you got plenty of time to get yours off too. So a content creator, what do you think?
Okay. So I think maybe I'm not sure I understand the question based on your response.
Maybe I don't.
You didn't give a content creator. You gave us a place
thread.
To go.
Yeah, that's fair. That was my bad.
I was going to say Deontay Kyle.
Okay. Okay.
I like Grits and Eggs podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Jam podcast, which is, I think, four young Black men.
Yes, I've
Deontay Kyle and the young men on that podcast have pragmatic Black experience conversations about today's political and socioeconomic climate,
mm-hmm.
from the perspective of young Black people.
Yep.
And that might sound like duh, but no. Because Ramses and I spend a lot of time talking about this new wave of contrarianism, where we see things that we think are obviously anti-us, and then a bunch of us jump out and defend it in the name of, I think, just having a different opinion than everyone else and thinking that that makes them the most woke, the way they use it, person in the room. So to have these brothers that talk like us and look like us, but that are brilliant, and really drive home how ridiculous some of these things are, so refreshing to me. It's so, like, I was starting to feel, and Ramses and I have had this conversation multiple times, we were starting to feel like we were losing our minds. Like, wait, am I the one that's crazy?
Yeah.
Like, you know, once upon a time, Ramses was challenged to ask himself, yo, is climate change real? I was challenged to ask myself, like, yo, am I tripping by not wanting my kids to be kidnapped by random men in tactical gear with assault rifles? Like, am I the one that's crazy? Because no one seems to understand where I'm coming from. And then I found these dudes, and they're like, yo, what's wrong with y'all, fam? And they're asking it in a way that you instantly feel ridiculous if you feel opposite of what they're saying.
Good.
Because it's not too deep to understand. It's like very straightforward in our language from our perspective. And it's like, okay, because for all of my life as a young black person, because I'm not a youngin' anymore, everyone I knew would have felt the same way about what's going on today. Everyone I knew would have felt the same way about electing Donald Trump to be the president. Everyone I knew would have felt the same way about tens of thousands of children either being murdered or essayed or trafficked. We all would have collectively felt the same way, and no one would have had to convince us. The type of people that we would never associate with back then, now those people are successful and rich and famous. And success has bought with it a desire for other people to want to experience that success and have proximity to it. And we've just watched a bunch of people assimilate to anti-black rhetoric, a bunch of black people. And they defend it under the ground of calling us sheep because we all feel the same way, the obvious way, the way that we should. And claiming themselves to be the free thinkers in the space. So it's been quite the experience, man. The Grits and Egg podcast and the Jam podcast. Shout out to Deontay Kyle.
I love that, man. I think that if I can throw a couple names in there again, as promised. There's a creator named Dan McClellan, who is a biblical scholar. And I think a lot of people need to know, like, what to have a scholarly approach to what the Bible is, what they think the Bible is telling them. Because many people read the King James Version and they ignore the fact that King James had that translation created in, I think, like the 1600s or something like that. And that translation came from a translation before it, and that came from another one before it, and going all the way back, right? And so getting at the essence of the text, if you want to get as close to what Matthew actually wrote, you know, you can go back further. And these biblical scholars definitely break that down and give you a more accurate view of what your faith should be compelling you to do. So Dan McClellan is one. Monty Mader is another one. Those two, I love them dearly. And yeah, get everybody, get their minds right. So, all right, let's move it on for entertainment before we get out of here. All right, so Obama's celebrity guest list is way longer than Trump's. I kind of love this story. This could have been our feel-good feature, but I'll share from the Daily Boulder. The Obama Presidential Center hasn't even opened its doors yet, and it's already accomplishing something Donald Trump has been struggling with for years, getting celebrities to voluntarily show up. The Obama Foundation announced a jaw-dropping lineup for this week's grand opening in Chicago, featuring enough Grammy, Oscar, Emmy, Tony, Golden Globe, and Hall of Fame winners to make an award show look underbook. Stevie Wonder, Bruce Springsteen, Bono, The Edge, John Legend, Jennifer Hudson, Christina Aguilera, Eddie Vedder, Common, Mark Anthony, The Roots, Tims, and that's just the short version. And it is. I read the long version. It's way more people than that. More than a decade after leaving the White House, Barack Obama remains remarkably popular, still drawing some of the biggest names in music and entertainment without having to beg, bully, threaten, or launch social media tantrums. Obviously, the Daily Boulder is a little colorful in this article here. All right, just days ago, Trump held his much-hyped UFC birthday bash at the White House. His allies promised a celebrity-packed spectacle. UFC boss Dana White reportedly invited everyone from Tom Brady and Adam Sandler to Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Jason Statham, Guy Ritchie, Jared Leto, and Mario Lopez. Most of them declined the invitation. The final guest list ended up looking considerably less impressive than the one being assembled in Chicago this week. The biggest celebrity Trump managed to land was comedian Nate Bargatze, I think, whose appearance sparked backlash from many of his own fans. Meanwhile, Obama's opening ceremony appears to be turning into a reunion of artists, activists, and cultural figures who actually want to be there. The event kicks off a weekend-long celebration on Chicago's South Side, where the Obama Presidential Center is expected to become one of the most significant cultural and civic institutions built in the city in decades. Okay. So this we know. Entertainers. Obama was a darling for that group. The Hollywood elites, you know, all these folks, people that I guess are well regarded in popular culture. Donald Trump's friends list is, again, considerably less well-rounded. Donald Trump is friends with Jeffrey Epstein. You know, I think, I mean, to be fair, Donald Trump over the years has been close to a few folks. Mike Tyson comes to mind, right? But nothing like what we've seen with Barack Obama. Add to it that, you know, a cage fight at the White House is just, it's really not the most dignified thing. And I realized the other day I said this. I don't know if I can walk it back, but maybe I'll provide a little bit more context because I said that, you know, I'm not a fan of cage fighting. And I recognize that a lot of people do like cage fighting and they like the athleticism and, you know, they're just a fan of the martial arts techniques deployed in different rounds against different opponents and whatnot. They like the strategy part of it. And I get it, you know, to each his own, right? Of course. I think what I was saying, and I think a lot of other people, celebrities included, perhaps, you know, I was talking earlier in the last segment about, you know, Black people at peace. There's some other content creators that I, or maybe there are threads that I follow. One of them is called Humans Being Bros, right? And this one is, it's on Reddit, of course. This is just people helping out animals, right? Again, I'm not an animal person, but I it makes me happy when people are helping out animals or helping out each other, right? I think seeing two people help each other, that makes me feel happy. People helping old women cross the street, like, that's cool, man. It just makes my heart a little happier. I'd rather see two people helping each other than two people hurting each other. I feel like that is just very low vibrational. And I'm sure that a lot of these celebrity types, they probably feel the same way. So even if it wasn't a Donald Trump White House event or whatever, they probably still wouldn't want to go to a cage match and watch two people hurt each other for an hour or however long these things last. It just, to me, it's just, it's a lot, you know. But, you know, this is a celebration of Obama and what he represented. And I've been watching the interviews with him and Michelle. Classy, as always, you know, not responding to what has been in the headlines lately. Again, classy move. They don't need to respond to that. You know, they've already made history. They've done everything. There's a huge monument in their home city, you know, or one of their home cities, I guess, to this president and everything that he meant and means to the people that got a chance to witness that moment in history. And it's a reminder of what is possible. You know, that's me saying that. I still think that it is possible. You did it before, you know, and it'll be a long road before it's possible again, but it is possible. And I think that before Obama, we didn't have an example of what was possible. Obama proved what is possible. And that testament to, you know, those 8 years in the White House and the, you know, the campaign season prior to, you know, his first term, it's just magnificent. And everybody that looks at that moment as a bright moment in this country's history, everybody that gets to be a part of that and share their talents with that, I see the appeal there. You know, it's like being connected to something special. And so this is why I think, on the one hand, Obama's party is going to be the party and Trump's party is a bunch of people fighting in the yard of the White House. So I can't wait. Q, what do you think?
This guy.
Oh, wow. The great place to start, man.
The So Young MC, I think, said no. Young MC said no.
Yeah.
Like, I think Milli or Vanilli said yes. I don't
Denny said
know.
no. Walked it back, though.
I think Vanilla Ice and goodness gracious, pardon the pun. I think Vanilla Ice said yes. I mean, I guess it's gonna be a barn burner, you know? Like, you know, shout out to the everybody's gonna be there.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, over at the Obamas,
Yo, you know what I mean?
it sounds like a Grammy after party.
Yes, sir.
And those are just the people performing. Imagine who's gonna be in
Going to be in the
attendance.
crowd, yeah.
So yeah, man, shout out to Barry O. I call him Barry because that's my people like that.
Barack.
And you know what I'm saying, Barack.
Rock.
Shout out to Barry O and Michelle, man. I'm an uncle, unk and auntie forever.
Yes, sir.
He was a better human.
Yeah.
I don't care what you think about him as a politician. He was good at that too, but he's a better human than this guy by leaps and bounds. Everybody knows it, and he's been obsessed with, jealous of, envious of, and hating on Obama for the entirety of his political career. So yeah, man, I don't have much more than that.
Yeah, man, there's really not a whole lot else to add. And I think that, the proof is in the pudding, man. Again, Obama, the article stated it plainly that Obama's not paying these people. He's not begging these people. These are people who want to come. These are the people. This is the culture, right? Indeed, the counterculture has a movement. But I'm going to say it because it just is the truth. I wish I could give you a different explanation, but the cohesive element on the conservative side of the aisle, the most cohesive element, is hatred. We can break that down a little bit. Anger, entitlement, all that sort of stuff that keeps that group, that collective, intact. And so that's what they have. Over on the more progressive side of things, it's culture. It's a party over here. Ain't nobody linking up to hate, to put people down, to feel entitled. No, these are people that are expressing gratitude, grateful, happy to be here, showing up, having fun, talent. And I know that it drives them crazy. I learned something from Joy Reid, and I say it a lot on the show. But they want the power and they want us to love them. And it infuriates them that they'll never have both. It's just wild because, again, Donald Trump and whoever always begging. And they get the same tired Kid Rock. I don't even know why they don't use Nicki Minaj. At least she has somewhat of a name. You know what I mean? But it's only so many Kid Rock performances that, you can stomach. How many times you need to hear this dude sing Ba with the Ba? Y'all, it's way more fun over here, y'all. Come on. Come back home, y'all. We having a party. We always having a party. So, all right, got to leave it right there. That's going to do it for us here at the QR Code. Today's show was produced by Chris Thompson. If you have some thoughts you'd like to share, use the red microphone talkback feature on the iHeartRadio app. And while you're there, be sure to hit subscribe and download all of our episodes. Also, be sure to check us out on all social media at Civic Cipher. That's CivicCipher. I'm your host, Ramses Ja, on all platforms. Q, you can find it. I am Q Ward on all platforms as well. And join us next time as we share our news with our voice from our perspective right here on the QR Code.